Welcome to Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing issues that divide us in order to find solutions that will unite us. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the seventh in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining issues that divide us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas, and I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive, through questions posed to the participants, an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of the causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful accommodation of each side towards the other. Today we have with us Warren Keough, Eddie Grasser, Pat Chesbro, and the topic for today, the seventh discussion, is gun violence. So we're going to start off with a little bit of an expose of the Second Amendment itself. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. First question, what did the framers mean by a well-regulated militia? Warren, what do you think they meant?
Wow, I guess I wasn't expecting a question on the constitutional history, but I would assume what they meant that it was that the common people, the populace, should be able to keep and bear arms in the event that a needed to assemble a militia for purposes of, foreign invasion. That's my unprepared, off-the-cuff response to that.
I don't think you might be pretty close there, buddy. What do you think, Eddie? The well-regulated militia.
I think Warren was fairly close. You have to take it in the context of when it was written, and the militia played a big role in the Revolution. They weren't always well-organized or well-disciplined, but there's many examples of the militia taking the battle to the British where the regular army was not in existence. So I believe they've really, reading the Federalist Papers and other documents from the era, I would say that they thought that people should have arms to protect themselves from tyranny, whether it's foreign or domestic.
Okay, so if it would be foreign, it would be an invasion imposing tyranny. If it would be domestic, it would be
our own government.
Okay, so you're thinking that the well-regulated militia was there in the framers' language in order to protect us from tyranny from the government.
Reading a lot of the Founding Fathers' statements, I would say that was so.
Okay, Pat, what do you think about a well-regulated militia?
Well, I fortunately wasn't there during and I appreciate that. The context that Eddie gives, I think that just the whole words well-regulated would imply that maybe there were militia that weren't very regulated, and they wanted to make sure people weren't vigilantes and just kind of taking things in their own hands. So I don't know who they intended to regulate or who had to be the regulators, but it looks like they wanted to have something a little bit organized to protect whomever. And I think about this as more of a group thing versus an individual thing.
Did the framers' definition of people, let me reread that, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Did the framers' definition of people, who they clearly wanted to have the right to keep and bear arms, did that include criminals, crazy or mentally deranged, radical Islamic terrorists, people with documented propensity for violence? Did the framers mean for those people to be included or as the group of people who had the right to keep and bear arms?
I don't know, but I could speculate. I would think not. What would be the advantage of having psychotic people, violent people, terrorists? That would be counterproductive. I mean, for a complete answer to a question like that, I guess you'd have to do a close reading of the history of the...
Well, there certainly weren't any radical Islamic terrorists back in the 18th century, but what I was just wondering is what you thought the framers had in mind as far as groups of people who might not be included in the people.
I believe that the examples you gave, Paul, it's been well established over the course of our history that those people should not be allowed to just willy-nilly acquire and keep arms. I mean, there's all kinds of laws on the books that the courts have upheld. For instance, the making machine guns illegal. And I realize that that's kind of a hard thing for some people to understand because they confuse semi-automatic rifles with machine guns, but they're two separate things. But you can't own a machine gun in America today unless you have a special license. And it's definitely, if you understand the rules of a felon, no felon's supposedly allowed to have a gun or being able to purchase a gun. So there are definite examples that address the question that you just raised.
Okay. Anything to add there, Pat?
Well, I just go back to the well-regulated piece. I would think part of regulation was having people who are trained and sane, part of a group with theoretically at least a leader, somebody that kind of keeps them together and that they have a purpose. And that's kind of my idea of what regulated would be.
Okay. Now, another phrase I'm going to pick out of the Second Amendment is the security of a free state. We find that very early in the Second Amendment. Does Columbine, Sandy Hook, Las Vegas, and now I think we can add Sutherland Springs, Texas, does that threaten the security of this nation, or does the protection of gun rights for perpetrators of these massacres increase that security? Everybody understand my question there? We've had a lot of mass murders, and I just named a few. And the fact that the people who perpetrated those mass murders were able to get firearms with relative ease. Now, does that ability to get those firearms with that ease and the thing that protects people from getting to get those firearms, protects the rights to get those firearms, what's more threatening to the security of our nation? Tough question, I guess, huh?
Well, you know, if we were talking about earlier, Eddie talked about the fact that it was against a government, whether foreign or domestic, our own government or another government might be.
I think it's pretty clear if you read the Federalist Papers and some of the writings of people like Jefferson and Madison that they feared government. They founded our government, but they also feared government. I mean, the power of governments can be absolute, no matter who perpetrated it. I mean, a lot of people in history forget that some of the worst people that ever ruled a nation, like Adolf Hitler, was elected to office. He didn't take over in a coup or anything.
Yeah, that's true. But the question is the ability for these people to perpetrate these mass murders and the protection of that ability, is that more of a threat? Or if we would reduce those protections for the rights to bear arms, would that be less of a threat? That's basically the question.
Well, I think like in the latest case in Texas, that person legally, under current laws, shouldn't have been able to acquire a gun legally, which he did because the Air Force goofed up. But there's a lot of laws on the books that address the issue of who can buy guns and who can't. For instance, like I said earlier, a felon's not allowed to buy a gun.
And maybe I just coming from a different tangent, I don't see it so much as a matter of national security generally. I see it unless in kind of an extended way, it's more of a, I mean, if we look at the, if you look at the statistics or the history of gun violence in this country, I wonder if we should, might be better addressed as a public health issue as opposed to a matter of national
maybe
security.
Public safety, but
public health as well. I mean, if you look at other if you just look at the raw numbers of deaths by guns in this country, I mean, it's
Well, you know, there was a statute passed that prohibited the Center for Disease Control to collect those statistics. You're aware of that?
Well, I think it was in a budget bill, and there was the CDC was sent the message that said, don't spend research dollars on matters related to gun violence, recollection. And they got the message. That was, a couple of decades ago.
So that's while. Yeah, they haven't been doing it for a while.
But if you look at the number of injuries and the number of deaths, whether it's by a mass shooting, which is a relatively small percentage of the actual deaths that occur secondary to guns, or if you look at suicides, or if you look at homicides or other things, if we compare it to other things that injure or kill people in this country, whether it's a communicable disease or whether it's car accidents, it's a public health issue fundamentally, and it's a public safety matter. And I would argue that it's certainly worthy of scientific study by epidemiologists, by folks at the Center for Disease Control, or other research entities.
It's one of the things that happens if we don't have real research is that people look at random pieces of data and say, well, this happened. This is because of this. And there's no way to know that this. I mean, just because it happens to be coincidental does not necessarily mean. I mean, this one statistic that's from the New York Times, it says the United States has 88.8 guns per 100 people, and three gun murders per 100,000 people. So it's far and above any other country in the world. I mean, Switzerland has 45.7 guns per 100 people, and we have 88. But Switzerland has 0.2 deaths per 100,000 people. So there's, you know, if you start looking at even just those kinds of numbers, it raises questions that should be investigated, in my opinion. So is this causal or just coincidental?
But it seems to me that what is happening with this debate is that numbers are being cherry-picked. And they're being cherry picked so one side can promote their particular position, and same with the other side. What do you think, Eddie?
Well, people are always going to cherry pick numbers, but the truth of the matter is the places where there's the strictest gun control laws on the books, like Chicago or Washington D.C., also have higher rates of violence than other parts of the country.
Well, that's a perfect example of cherry-picking there, because if you're in Chicago, you may have a restriction on buying guns in Chicago. What they do is go across the river to Indiana and buy those guns very easily, and then go back to Chicago with the guns they bought. And I think they can do the same thing in crossing the Potomac River into Virginia and Washington, D.C., and get the guns that way. Because we have such a loose ability to prohibit people who shouldn't have guns from getting guns across state lines, it's pretty easy to get them. Am I wrong about that?
In my experience, and you can go to other countries for this, like Afghanistan, where it's illegal for the common person to own a gun. Everybody has guns. I mean, I don't think you stop people from acquiring guns just because you have a law against it.
That's perfectly obvious with this guy down at the Sutherland Springs. He was not allowed to have a gun. He got one, and he was able to take out a lot of people.
I mean, you're not going to stop criminals from getting guns just because you passed a law.
That's true. And the thing that I guess concerns me about part of this, you know, criminals, people also become criminals with guns. They don't start out, I'm a criminal and I have a gun and I'm using it for my criminal things. People become criminals with guns. And I'm going to just use my own family example. So my daughter was murdered. My daughter was murdered by a woman who was her fiancé's sister. And she came up behind her and she shot her 6 times as she sat in her car. My daughter sat in her car. So she wasn't a criminal before that. She's a criminal now, for sure.
Right.
But she wasn't a criminal then. So that's the problem you get into when we use the criminal thing. I think it makes it too easy for somebody to become a criminal if they have has too much availability. I don't know. I mean, I know that there's laws, but what happens at a gun show? Does everybody always follow the laws at a gun show? I don't know. I don't know.
What do you think, Warren? Anything about this topic here?
First, I guess just a comment on Eddie's comment. I'm not sure. I mean, his point is well taken, but I'm not sure how good of a comparison is between the United States and Afghanistan. I mean, if you're Afghanistan is a violent place and has a long history of violence, but if we want to make a more rational, sensible comparative analysis between nations, between the United States and other countries, let's look at Canada. Let's look at the nations of Western Europe for a more meaningful dialogue.
Okay, I want to get to another point that that Eddie brought up was talking to him on the phone. You said to me whenever we our first phone conversation that something to the effect that it is the Second Amendment that preserves the First Amendment. Remember when you said that?
Yep, I sure do.
Okay. What did you mean? Did I get that right?
You got that right.
Okay. What did you mean by that?
Well, it goes back to my comments earlier about defending your liberty against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I mean, going back to what I said earlier about the Founding Fathers, you know, government can become tyrannical no matter what the basis of it. In fact, looking at this little book here you gave me, there's a lot of evidence that the guy that's known as the father of the Constitution, James Madison, looked upon citizen initiatives and referendums as mobocracy.
As a what?
Mobocracy.
Okay.
Where the rights of the individual are trampled upon by the will of the majority. Just because 51% of the people might think something's right doesn't necessarily make it so.
Does not make it so. I mean, it doesn't make it wrong either.
Well, 50, if it travels upon the individual rights of the rights of an individual, I say it makes it wrong.
Okay. All right. I can see how that means. Yeah, you can go that.
The United States was founded on the idea that individuals had rights, not communities.
So you're talking. Well, so what do you mean about the individual rights? Which particular individual rights are you referring to that are being trampled on?
I think there were some pretty good examples this last year where people in certain positions of leadership or authority, like take for instance in Missouri where the university professor tried to shut down the young student reporter that was at an event.
That's happening all over the college campuses these
days.
Yeah,
that's just wrong.
So you're talking about the individual rights of somebody to speak out. And
you get this groupthink going on, and they listened to this professor, and they attacked that young guy.
So how do you suppose we have our democracy work then if we can't have 51% of the people doing what?
Well, do you think we're not a democracy.
Wrong?
We're supposed to be a republic.
Okay, well, how do we work the republic if we're going to vote for our leaders, though, right?
Right, representatives. If you don't like the way they're representing you, find a new guy.
And how are those trampling on the rights?
Well, I think if you could travel back in time and figure out how governments transform, the transformation from the Weimar Republic to the Nazi regime certainly started trampling on the rights of people, even though they were in the majority. The Nazis were in the majority. They got elected to office.
They were never, ever close to being the majority.
They got elected to office majority
party. They won 33% of the vote in 1932, and what happened was Hindenburg died. He was the president. Hindenburg died, and Hitler took over. So the only time they had the majority vote was after Hitler had managed the next election, where they got 99% of the vote.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. People can come into power and orchestrate things so that people's rights are trampled upon.
But going back to, you know, the earlier conversation, if we're talking about militia, okay, so then people getting together to stand up for what they believe in, and I would hope that we don't have to shoot each other to do that anymore, but maybe we do. What about the people like the guy in Texas? What about the guy in Las Vegas? I mean, that's the ultimate trampling on rights. when you're shooting from a hotel and killing people at random without even knowing who they are or having any viable reason for that. So, I guess my question is,
what are you
going to
do about that?
Well, that's the question. What are we going to do about that?
Let's go on to the next question here. While we never will get to 100% agreement on any issue, 85% is a rather sizable majority of Americans who do not want violent criminals and crazies to have unfettered access to guns. Is background checks the best method to prevent that access? And if it's not, is there any suggestion as a method to prevent that access?
Well, it may not be the best method, but it certainly would be a helpful method. And correct me if I'm wrong, Eddie, but background checks for the purchase of firearms. So that's mandated under federal law at gun shops. Where it's not mandated is at gun shows. So, and I think there's some, either a fifth or a quarter of all gun sales in this country happen in places outside of gun shops. So, and you're talking about percentages of people who support a concept. I think the numbers are pretty unequivocal by different folks who have different polls in the past. And that is, if you're going to acquire a weapon, a background check is in order. And if we have a loophole, if we have 20 or 25% of the folks who purchase a gun don't have aren't required to have a background check, then I think that's a problem. And the way to fix that is simply expand the existing Pat shaking her head. No, the way to do that is to mandate background checks at places where they're not required, as at a gun show. Why can't we do that? The results of polls I've seen, it's like at a minimum of 88%, 90% of folks, gun owners and non-gun owners included, that just seems to me a common sense, rational, helpful thing to do to help limit guns from falling into the hands of people that shouldn't own them, crazy people, violent people.
Well, why?
This is KVRF, Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. This is Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing one of the many issues that divides us politically. We are here to seek solutions to those issues through examination and dialogue. Today we are talking about gun violence. I stopped you, Pat. My apologies.
Why have gun shows? I mean, we don't have liquor shows where I can bring my wine and you can buy it from me. If we had something like that, you'd have to show your ID before you came in. Maybe it's at the door of a gun show that you have to do your background check, so you can't even come to the gun show unless you have a background check. When I went to buy Sudafed the other day, not the other day, but I went to buy Sudafed, and I just walked over there because I didn't have my purse, they said, you can't buy Sudafed. You don't have your ID. I couldn't buy Sudafed. I mean, it seems like if we can do it with Sudafed, we should be able to do it with guns.
But I think it's unrealistic to your suggestion to ban gun shows. I just don't think that's not going to happen. I think that's...
Do we have drug shows?
What?
Do we have drug shows? Do we have...
No, but I'm...
Do we have...
What
I guess
I'm
we have
saying,
car shows.
What I'm, say, what I'm saying here in the... I mean, we have a... There's a certain significant part of our culture that is a gun culture. I mean, if you compare our country to other countries, I mean the amount of guns that we have is phenomenal. I own a dozen or so handguns, rifles, and shotguns myself. But I think you have to be politically realistic about this.
So what are you saying? You're sort of contradicting what you just said earlier.
How did I do that?
Well, you were talking about gun shows. Somehow we have to get the background checks. I think what Pat is suggesting is not the elimination of gun shows as much as the alteration of them in order to include background checks. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Then we're on the same page.
I'll tell you what. When I was principal of Palmer High School and the Lions Club had their gun show at Palmer High, I really didn't like it.
All right, Eddie, your chance now. You've heard their opinions on gun shows. What do you think?
Well, I think I'm a good example of these gun owner guys because actually when I started first grade here in Palmer, that was a long time ago, I could take my rifle to school and check it in with the office and hunt rabbits on the way home. If you tried to do that today, you'd be in jail.
So I mean, you think it's better the old days whenever you think that would work today in today's environment, taking your rabbit?
Oh, you'd never you can never do that.
No, I don't think so either.
I'm just saying that culture has changed, and I think that's what we're dealing with here is, there's, you know, the America was mostly a rural culture up until recent historical times. I mean, last 7,500 years, we've transitioned from being a rural culture to an urban culture.
We've had cities for a while now. Had cities from the beginning.
You go back to 1900, most Americans lived in rural, what was known as rural America.
And a lot then moved to the factories because they had better jobs than working
on
the farm.
Well, that's the transition I'm talking about, though. That took about 100 years. And now most people live in cities or suburban environments. And they don't look at things like guns the same way rural people do. I mean, for most people I know in rural Alaska and rural America, for that matter, it's no different than a screwdriver. And I can guarantee you can kill a person with a screwdriver just as easy as a gun.
Oh, I think you kill more people with guns. Go ahead, Pat.
I don't think just as easy. And I have guns. My husband had guns. We had guns. It's not...
Right.
I think we have to get back to it. It is the figuring out how the public safety is protected despite the fact that we have a lot of guns. How do we do that? I don't know.
I don't think you can. I mean, in my experience, there's always going to be evil people out there, and they're always going to perpetrate violence. And I don't see a solution to that.
But it seems we have a lot more of those evil, violent people in America today. If you're just looking at the enormity of the numbers, well, the enormity of the murders is what I'm talking about. You have other nations with a lot of people that don't have the enormous numbers of murders and mass shootings that we're experiencing in America today. Go ahead, Warren. I interrupted you.
I think I forgot what I was going
to
say.
All right, I'm going to move on to my next question now. I think we all agree that convicted violent criminals should not be allowed to possess firearms while in prison. I worked in prison for 20 years, and I think having the inmates having guns would not be a good thing. So I think we're all going to agree with that one, right? And that law-abiding citizens should be allowed to responsibly possess firearms for sport and protection. Those are two extreme categories. One category which we would prohibit access to firearms, the inmates in the jail, and the other end which we would allow access. There has to be a line we can draw in which we divide society into groups that should not have guns and ones that should be allowed to possess firearms. Where do you draw that line?
Well, that's... I guess my line would be drawn on a variety of issues. Who gets to own or purchase a weapon and who doesn't? If you have a history of mental illness, you should not have a firearm. If you're a convicted felon, as the law says now, you should not be allowed to have a firearm. I would argue, too, that there's been a recent discussion on whether you're on a terrorism or a watch list. If you're a suspected terrorist or on a watch list, that person should not be allowed to purchase or own a weapon. If you have a history of domestic abuse, and so many of the murders and some mass killings are related to, including this most recent one, If you have a history of domestic abuse, then no, you're not. You draw the line there, and I think there are a few other areas too. But I mean, that seems pretty. To me, it's common sense. I know the National Rifle Association and others would as an organization would argue that, but I think that's. I mean, how can you support the concept that crazy people, felons, possible terrorists, and others should be able to open carry, conceal carry, acquire, keep lethal firearms. Makes no sense to me.
Do you have a line, Pat?
Well, I may be wandering off here because I'm thinking that one of the things that's happened as a result of people that we are afraid have weapons that they, people who shouldn't have, who don't act responsibly with weapons, then I just had somebody post, I'm going to have we should all get concealed carry permits. It's like, whoa, now, and, you know, I think, I'm not sure that that's the response. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And the problem is figuring out who is mentally ill enough to be violent. I mean, are people who are depressed might shoot themselves, you know, and that's not good either. So I don't know. I think it's dicey, and I don't know the answer. I wish I did.
This is KVRF Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. This is Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing. I think I was disgusting before as well. One of the many issues that divides us politically. We are here to seek solutions to those issues through examination and dialogue. Today we're talking about gun violence, and the question about where to draw the line goes to you, Eddie Grasser.
Well, I'm not sure you can draw a line. I mean, everybody I know, including the leadership of the NRA and the National Shooting Sports Foundation and others, would agree with Warren's statement that felons shouldn't be allowed to have guns. And I know that the NRA and the National Shooting Sports Foundation has been trying to work with the FBI and other agencies to have an improved national NICS check so that it has the information in there about people that have mental problems.
So you think that's a fundamental problem, that lack of coordination with the national NICS check?
In some instances, yeah. I think the NICS check would work a lot better if there was better information.
What is that? That is the thing that what's-his-face, the Air Force was supposed to put, Kelly, I think his name was.
Yeah.
The Air Force was supposed to notify. It's NCIC. I'm not really sure what that means. It's the national database of people who are not allowed to have guns for federal reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you go to purchase a gun, Pat, you have to fill out all this paperwork, and they call it in. Before you can walk out of the store with the gun, they call that in to the national office, and they check your name to see if it's on any of those lists. And if it's on those lists, you're not going to walk out of the store with
the gun. So are we agreed that the gun show loophole is something that needs to be tightened up or not?
Well,
because that's how we're talking
of,
about the background checks. That's how we get on the NICS list through some kind of database. And if gun shows do not have that restriction, then it's kind of futile.
Well, getting back to the cherry-picking data, I mean, I know there's research, and there's probably research on the other side of this, but it doesn't appear that gun shows are where most criminals get their guns, from the data I've seen anyway.
Well, there's an argument for more data, I think. And I mean, if one of the goals is to better draw a line about who and who should not possess or be able to purchase firearms, let's have epidemiologists, professional researchers do that. And that's one of the things that efforts that have been hindered by the National Rifle Association. So I fault them in part for having they're very effective at what they do. But how can we argue that that's not that we shouldn't all have a better understanding of the causations and the statistics, the numbers on gun violence in this country, and what are the factors that go into that have increased that, and what factors, what could we do possibly to reduce that? Research is a good thing, and as opposed to cherry picking whatever data we want to make our argument.
So you're basically talking about having information out there in a way which would facilitate the discussion, like the discussion we're having here today.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about these, this guy, this is Nicholas Kristof, who writes for the Times, and he has some suggested things that we could consider, like these research smart guns that you have to have a pin or you have to have a fingerprint or something like that before you can use it. So that would mean that if I was going to sell the gun to somebody else, we would have to register that person so that person then could get a pin or whatever, like your phone or something. I don't know. I mean, it seems like there's some things we could do to back up the law so that it would make it more difficult to subvert, I guess. And maybe somebody shouldn't get 36. Wait, how many did that guy have in Las Vegas? Didn't he have, how many weapons did he have in that room? Lots.
So you would argue that, Warren, because you have lots of guns in your life.
I had lots of guns in my house.
Yeah.
Well, I have a dozen guns or so, but I'm not. You know, when I if we think that it would be in our collective best interest to make some kind of change. I mean, we're not going to make some wholesale change. We can't even make, we haven't been effective at making the tiniest little incremental changes that make things better in the, in our, that part of our culture that's related to guns. So let's just start with a single item and then, and a, or two or three items. And
okay,
something.
What that, are those items?
Well, the one that we just talked about, I mean, it's, if you have 90% or more of the population and of our country thinks it's a sensible, it's a good idea that anyone acquiring a firearm, irrespective of it's at a gun shop or a gun show, a background check should be mandatory. That's, why can't we do that? That's a relatively simple, I mean, that's a simple solution. And I think that would have some effect. I mean, we could argue about how effective it would be, but I think it'd be a small step in the right direction.
Do you have an opinion on Warren's suggestion that we implement background checks at the gun shows, Eddie?
Well, you might be able to do that, but I'm not sure how. I mean, most of the transactions that happen at a gun store are between individuals, neither one of which have an FFL, which is a federal firearm license. If you have a FFL, then you're even if you're at the gun show, you're required to do a background check on those people that purchase your items for sale there.
So it is a restriction that Warren is
So basically you're saying the only people at the gun show that can sell guns are those that are licensed FFLs.
Yeah, is that what you're saying, Warren?
Well, no, I'm sure that not necessarily. I mean, there can be, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hadn't thought about it that much, but there could be ways. I mean, right now we have people without a federal firearms license selling weapons to whoever wanders in the door and purchases. So without a requisite background check. So there, I mean, I haven't thought about this at all, but I presumably someone, there could be a way if you're in the confines of a gun show and you have a willing seller and a willing buyer, then you go to someone, maybe you have to go through a federal firearms dealer there that the gun show would sponsor.
So you believe it's worth the hassle to increase the bureaucracy to ensure more accountability with the background checks?
I'd not necessarily call it bureaucracy, but it seems to me a relatively easy fix. I mean, let's be a little creative here. It can't be that onerous or that burdensome to do a simple check
Well, the gun shop owners have to do it anyway. So, I mean, they're not complaining about it, or maybe they're complaining about it, but they're still willing to do it in order to make the sale. One of the things I saw on TV today was a congressman who was speaking about the idea of transferring a firearm to like a relative, like a dad giving his gun collection to his son. And the reporter was sort of giving him a rough time about the idea of not having any paperwork with that kind of transfer. What do you think about that? Eddie, what do you think about that? Is that an intrusion? Because that's what the word the congressman used. That would be an unfair intrusion into the private lives of these people, this family.
I would tend to agree with that congressman because I have quite a few guns in my possession, mostly because my grandfather was a competitive shooter. In fact, I still have the Frontiersman article where he set the world's record in the sitting position right here in Palmer. And so I inherited all his guns.
Do you have any problem with having paperwork filed on those guns?
Yeah, I would.
Okay. Why?
Well, because regardless of what the government tells you, all those guns are not registered. And they're not in any database. Even though they're supposed to destroy the record when you go in and purchase a firearm and they do the NICS check, they send all that information into the National Center. And supposedly, after a certain amount of time, it all gets destroyed. But I don't know if that's true or not. And gun registration is a pretty iffy proposition, in my opinion, if you're going to maintain freedom. It's well documented that, again, in Nazi Germany and other countries where they've had gun registration, the first doors they knocked on to confiscate guns were those that were registered. Those people were law-abiding citizens, and they had their guns confiscated Because they, unlike the criminals, they actually went in and registered their guns when it was required.
So is that your fear? Your fear that we have a totalitarian regime take everybody's guns, and without addressing the issue of the massacres that we've been experiencing with an alarming rate?
I'd have to come down on the side of freedom. And personally, I don't think you can stop people from killing other people. There's psychopaths that are born every day.
So we're going to just go ahead and let that go then?
I don't know how you solve it.
Well, Warren had a suggestion. It's not,
that's not going to solve
that's
it.
Not, that's not a legitimate solution to the
that's
problem.
It's not going to stop people that want to perpetrate violence from getting the tools they need to do that.
But it might have fewer people. I mean, there's not going to be any magic solution to this issue, but can we even whittle away at it, I think, is the question.
And we can.
I mean, I said earlier, we had guns in my house. I never in the world thought anybody would murder my daughter. She was not in a scary place. She was not a scary person. She was not doing drugs. She was at work. I mean, why would you ever expect that your life, which is really your whole freedom, the whole thing, would be taken away? I was just hearing that one of the families in Sunderland, Texas, lost 9 family members. 9. Now, that's the ultimate loss of freedom from my perspective. And I would hope we would be not so afraid of the government that we wouldn't want to work with the government to make things better for people, those little children in Sandy Hook. I mean, they didn't do anything wrong. It's not, we've got to find some, even if we whittle away at something.
To that, to Pat's point, is our government that scary that we need to have all these firearms to try to prevent that tyranny from being imposed on our lives? That we wouldn't try to do something like what she's suggesting?
Sure. Well, I don't think it is right now, but governments have a tendency to become more and more autocratic. And as they do so, they tend to become more and more restrictive of individual rights. And the whole political correctness thing, that's an infringement on people's rights.
Political correctness?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're off track now. This is KVRF, Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. 89.7 on your radio dial in Palmer and Wasilla, 89.5 in the Sutton area, and 91.5 Glacier View. This is Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing one of the many issues that divides us politically. We are here to seek solutions to those issues through examination dialogue. Today we are talking about gun control and gun violence. Warren, you're chomping at the bit over there.
Well, I don't know if I'm chomping at the bit, but I wanted just a follow-up comment on something that Eddie said and something that Pat said as well. So I would tend to agree with Eddie. Certain firearms that I possess have significant value to me, personal value, and I identified some of them in my will. You know, some of my sons will get certain of my firearms, and I don't have any problem with passing those along.
Do you have any problem with having paperwork accompanying that?
I'd have to think about that, but I could maybe tolerate that. I don't know. Pat's comment was there should be some things that we could whittle away at. And if we're going to effectively whittle away at something, it has to be something that a large majority of the people in this country are on board with. And there are some of those things. I mentioned one, the background checks at gun shows. I think that would have some kind of effect. There's the more obvious ones too. The whole concept of bump stocks that turns a semi-automatic rifle into an automatic weapon, into a machine gun. Machine guns are allowed, but if we have some kind of a technological mechanism that turns a semi-automatic rifle into a machine gun, why do we have that?
That question was later on, talking about bump stocks. Let's talk about that now since you brought it up. Eddie, what do you think about bump stocks?
Well, I think that from what I know, Congress is already moving to make those illegal.
Should they be illegal?
Well, if it's illegal for a regular person without the proper licensing to own a machine gun, I don't see why the bump stock equipped guns wouldn't fall in the same category.
Okay. You're agreeing with that, Pat, right?
I am certainly agreeing.
Okay.
With that.
There is a lot of attention paid to gun violence that are murders, but there are also many lives lost by suicide and accidents using firearms. What can be done about that?
I guess I go with the whole issue of availability and ease of, that's a pretty fast way to kill yourself. I mean, it's a lot faster than taking poison, or somebody might find you and save you. I know in three situations, actually, a friend of my daughter's, my son-in-law's brother, kids from school. It's being depressed, being discouraged, being whatever, and having the opportunity, having it right there. There's nothing that keeps you from taking the gun and killing yourself. And I don't know. I mean, again, I am not a gun owner. I have some guns, but I'm not a gun user. So what is there anything that would slow somebody down so they'd have to think about it before? I mean, locking them up. I don't know.
What do you think, Warren, about accidents and suicides? Is there any common sense solution to address that issue?
Well, Pat makes a good point about access, and that's fundamentally, or in many ways, just a matter of simple gun safety. If you think about kids and kids that commit suicide, if you have handguns or rifles are not accessible to children because they're locked up, that can make a difference, I think.
Go ahead, Eddie. What do you think about that?
I think in the case of children, that's what Warren just said is probably true. But I mean, if somebody's intent on committing suicide that's an adult, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it probably is quicker with a gun, but I don't think that stops them from attempting it some other way.
Okay, let's talk about Stephen Paddock. He was the Las Vegas shooter. 58 dead, hundreds injured, and let's just spend some time on the man himself. My information, which is scant due to basic laziness on my part, is that he was a gambler who assembled an arsenal and was described as very nice by the gun shop person who assisted in helping to assemble that arsenal. Anything you want to add about that man particularly? That was the most prolific gun massacre in the history of America, happened a few weeks ago?
I'm not sure it's the most prolific one, but then my great-grandmother was a Lakota. And I can name several massacres that took place where lots more people than that were killed.
And that was by the U.S. Army, though. That was
right.
The cavalry out
right.
There imposing their will on the...
But it was still against American citizens.
That's right.
I think Stephen Paddock's... The main question there is he's a great example, in my opinion, of how people get around. You could implement all these things that we're talking about here tonight, and he still would have got his guns because he did everything legally, and he his profile up until the time he went off the deep end was that of a normal working American. I mean, and he was fairly well-to-do. You just don't go buy everything that he had without a little bit of money. So he obviously had some money. And must have been, must have worked fairly hard to get that. I haven't seen any definitive statements on, exactly what the motive was or what happened there. But I think there's people like that out there that a switch flips or what. I don't know what the case is, but everything you implement to stop bad people from getting guns, they're not going to pick up on people like that.
But some small things might. I agree with most of what Eddie said there, but I guess my question would be, my understanding just from reading the paper was that he had a variety of assault rifles, all these semi-automatic weapons, and he had a bump stock on all of them. So if he's spraying a crowd indiscriminately with bump stocks that empower a semi-automatic rifle to be fully automatic, that pumps out a lot more rounds than it would be otherwise. I guess the question would be, would there be fewer fatalities and fewer injuries if we didn't have bump stocks?
So we're talking about the motive that no one seems to be able to pinpoint. But isn't it possible that the motive is just having power, just to try to inflict your power over a mass of people
Well, I don't think that's the question, though, Paul. I mean, well, we may never know what the motive was, but my point was, is this was, by all appearances, for most of his life, an average American that nobody identified as being prone to violence.
Yeah. You know, is there any, I mean, I don't know. He had a lot of guns, right? A lot of semi-automatic weapons, is that right? So is there any, it's like, go back to the Sudafed thing. I couldn't buy another Sudafed for a month or something like that.
Well, you're stuck on this Sudafed thing, aren't you?
Well, I'm just saying it's such a stupid thing, I think, to worry about Sudafed when you're letting somebody buy 36 semi-automatic rifles. I mean... could we keep track? I mean, if you actually go through the background checks, is there anything that keeps track of them? Well, this guy got kind of crazy. With 36 of them.
I can tell you, Pat, there's a lot of people out there that have a lot more than he had.
At once, though, but he bought them in a short amount of time, right? Short amount of time.
Well, when Obama became president, there was people buying those things like hotcakes.
I know. They were afraid he was going to take all their ammunition, and so they wanted to buy.
Well, they were afraid he was going to outlaw the semi-automatics, which he wasn't able to do.
I don't even know if he tried that hard.
I don't think there was any attempt to do that. I think there was a fair amount of fear-mongering, which did wonders for the profits of the gun industry. But really, there's no the idea that the federal government's going to come and take our firearms, I think that's nonsense.
But it was a genuine fear. The fear was genuine,
but I don't think that has any basis in reality. That's
unfounded fear.
Exactly.
As I was putting these questions together, the Texas Church Massacre at Sutherland Springs, Texas, took place 2-3 days ago. President Trump said from Asia, this is a mental health issue, not a gun issue. Is he right? And are these issues at all connected?
You know, we were having a discussion about gun rights years ago when I was a little more active politically. And I had a group of people, they were all against gun ownership. And they thought guns were terrible things and it caused all kinds of problems. So I made them form a circle and I pulled my handgun out and put it in the middle of the circle. And I said, okay, we're all going to stand in this circle until that gun does something to somebody. How long do you think we're going to have to wait for that? And after a few moments, one lady finally says, well, we'll have to wait forever. It's not going to do anything by itself. I says, exactly.
So people do pull the trigger. I think we all agree about that.
Yeah, so it's the people that you have to concentrate on.
Well, yeah, well, mental health is associated with a person. So you're saying it's not a gun issue, it's totally mental health?
No, it's not totally mental health.
Okay, so they are connected in your mind somewhat?
No, I don't think gun ownership is connected to that. But what I meant by it's not totally mental health, unless you... I mean, there's people out there that act normal all the time. But I'm trying to remember the name of the book I just read about psychopaths, but they're very good at camouflaging themselves. And they have actually no remorse, no conscience, no nothing. So if something flips within them, they'll go out and kill people. It doesn't matter whether it's a battle axe or a gun or whatever.
Warren, was the president right? It's a mental health issue, not a gun issue?
Well, I think it's an issue of both. I mean, if we look at the recent and growing and now inevitable, I mean, when's the next single shooter massacre going to... We've had two of the top five massacres in this country by an individual has happened in the last 6 weeks, the one in Las Vegas and now this most recent one. So it's... They go together, a crazy person with guns.
Pat?
Well, I think anybody who kills anybody else like that, it has mental illness, because I don't think that's a normal kind of behavior for anybody. But I do think that if we make things a little bit more difficult, that's going to help a little. I think that's going to help some. It may not help at all, because there are people that are, I mean,
Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her father 40 whacks, you know? I mean, people kill other people, unfortunately, and
Lorena Bobbitt had a different weapon than, than the rest.
Yeah, so anyways, I think the mental health thing.
Well, on that note, we're going to wrap it up for today. Thanks, Mike, for giving me all the heads up on the time. Warren, Eddie, Pat, thanks a lot. That's all for Bridging the Gap on this 7th episode. Good night. Thanks for listening to Bridging the Gap. We welcome diversified perspectives. If you are interested in becoming a panelist for a future show, send us an email to manager@radiofreepalmer.org.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters.